You are listening to Word of Mouth OCAP Radio at 88.1 CKLN FM in Toronto, coming at you from the Ryerson campus. I am Kelly Bentley, and I will be your host for today. Ahead is another packed show. First, we will be talking to a member of CAIA about their upcoming day of action. Then we will be listening to a clip from last week's anti-police brutality rally. Then we will be listening to a clip from New York City's Movement for Justice in Albario. And finally, we will be listening to various clips from OCAP's Poor People's Assembly. Next, some community announcements from Susie Alvarez and Chital Lodia.
With headlines, thanks for tuning in. My name is Susie Alvarez, and we begin today with the following headline. The death toll from the Japanese earthquake and tsunami has passed 10,000 people, with over 17,000 people missing. Japan's earthquake is the fifth largest in history. Currently in Japan, officials are investigating a damaged nuclear reactor at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power station, which may have cracked. Officials are still trying to determine the source of a nuclear leak, which has released dangerous levels of radiation and which many fear has contaminated food and water supplies. After stepping into contaminated water, two nuclear plant workers have been hospitalized. This week, 10 members of the National Diet of Japan, the country's two-chamber legislature, signed a petition seeking that the Japanese government, quote, one, evacuate pregnant mothers and preschool-aged children from within the 30-kilometer radius of the Fukushima nuclear power plant, and two, drastically increase the general public evacuation zone beyond the 20-kilometer radius, unquote.
Aftershocks of the earthquake are still being felt in East Asia. An earthquake in northeastern Myanmar near the Thailand border has killed 70 people and injured over 100. Over 400 houses, 14 Buddhist temples, and 9 government buildings have been damaged. As with the majority of natural disasters, the most rural and poorest of people have been the most affected, and reports of injuries and death tolls are still coming. No tsunami warning has been issued thus far for that region.
Events in Japan have forced other nations to re-examine their nuclear policies and procedures. In the U.S., the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's inspector has found that more than one quarter of U.S. nuclear power plants failed to report equipment defects. Moreover, 28% of the power plants have no awareness of national regulations when it comes to nuclear safety and reporting. In Canada, nuclear power comprises about 15% of Canada's electricity as of 2009. Following the earthquake in Japan, the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission has, quote, ordered all reactor operators to revisit their safety plans and report on all potential improvements, end quote, by the end of April 2011. Canada's history with nuclear power dates back to 1942, when the first nuclear lab was set up in Montreal with funds from the National Research Council of Canada.
In Syria, protesters gathered today for massive demonstrations, a day of dignity following a week-long assault by Syrian state forces, in spite of a promise from the state to put reforms in place. Many believe that the promise came after the rally in the city of Daraa, where more than 20,000 people gathered to protest the state and where state forces killed 25 people. According to reports from the live bloggers at Al Jazeera News, protests began peacefully, and then protesters pulled down a statue of the president, after which Syrian forces opened fire on the crowds, killing at least 20 people thus far.
In Yemen, hundreds of thousands of people have ggathered today in the country's capital of Sana'a to protest the U.S.-backed president, Ali Abdullah Saleh. Activists have refused to accept Saleh's offer to step down at the end of the year. Yassin Norman head of Yemen's opposition coalition, described Saleh's offer as empty words. The protests today follow last week's demonstrations where state supporters killed 52 protesters.
Meanwhile, in the U.S., some academics are pointing to the American defense effort AFRICOM as one of the driving motives behind Operation Odyssey. Established under the Bush administration and strengthened under Obama, AFRICOM stands for the United States Africa Command, and it's responsible for U.S. military operations and military relations with 53 African nations, an area of responsibility covering all of Africa with the exception of Egypt. Horace Campbell, a professor of African-American studies and political science at Syracuse University, commented, quote, U.S. involvement in the Libyan bombing is being turned into a public relations ploy for AFRICOM. AFRICOM is fundamentally a front for U.S. military contractors like DynaCorp, MPRI, and KBR operating in Africa. U.S. military planners who benefit from the revolving door of privatization of warfare are delighted by the opportunity to give AFRICOM credibility under the facade of Libyan intervention. No African country has agreed to let AFRICOM onto the continent. It has 1,500 people operating out of Stuttgart, Germany. If Libya is indeed partitioned, that new state could provide a base for AFRICOM, end quote. Campbell also noted that while the U.S. is participating in a campaign that seeks to oust a so-called tyrant, it is actively backing other oppressive regimes in countries in the region like Bahrain and Saudi Arabia.
And now we come back to Canada. After the release of $250 billion federal budget, all three of the opposition parties came together this afternoon on a historic vote to say they no longer have confidence in the Conservative government. Following the vote, Speaker Peter Milliken addressed Stephen Harper as a parliamentarian and not a prime minister when Harper moved to adjourn the House of Commons. Harper later addressed reporters and said he will meet the Governor General on Saturday to inform him of the dissolution of Parliament and the need to call for an immediate election. Officials are predicting that federal elections could fall on May 2nd or 9th. Recent polls have revealed that the Prime Minister and its Conservative regime still have a lead in terms of public support, though who the public is that was polled, we are not exactly sure. As all parties fine-tune their campaign strategies and schedules, the Conservatives continue with their platform of lowering corporate taxes, increasing military and prison spending, and cutting the deficit.
Also in national news, the Canadian Council for Refugees expressed its disappointment in response to the upcoming changes to the temporary foreign workers regulations. The council claims that the changes which come into force on April 1st of this year do not adequately protect migrant workers. CCR President Wanda Yamamoto expressed, quote, there are many documented cases of abuse and difficult conditions faced by temporary foreign workers in Canada, workers who are contributing to the Canadian economy. The upcoming changes do not solve the problem. Abusive employers and recruiters are still not being held accountable, end quote. Advocates argue that temporary foreign workers provide cheap labor but are offered few protections. Employers who fail to comply with their obligations towards the workers are rarely penalized. Workers are also denied access to many important services, such as language instruction and, in most cases, to permanent residence in Canada. Canada is increasingly using temporary foreign workers to fill permanent jobs. The number of workers admitted to Canada on a temporary visa has doubled in recent years. The Canadian Council for Refugees believes that Canada should use immigration as a nation-building strategy and give migrant workers access to permanent residency, rather than using them as a disposable source of labor.
And now we're going to go to some community announcements of things happening around town this weekend or in the coming days. And first, we begin with the Toronto Storytelling Festival, which begins today, and it's a 10-day celebration of the traditional Aboriginal art of oral storytelling. The theme this year is the seventh generation, past, present, and future, which is inspired by the belief that we should consider how our current actions will affect the next seven generations. The festival runs until April the 3rd, and for more information, you can visit www.torontostorytellingfestival.ca.
And next we have an announcement for Justice for Migrant Workers and the Mennonite New Life Center, who are extending an invitation to all fundraising to a fundraising concert happening this Saturday, March 26th at 7:30 p.m., St. Simon's Church, 525 Bloor Street East. This musical benefit, called Voices Unite Us, is organized by the Common Thread Chorus and will feature the participation of Proyecto Altiplano, Proceeds for the event will go to benefit the work of two nonprofit community organizations actively working with the broader Latin American community, Latin American immigrant community, as well as Mexican migrant worker farm workers in Ontario. For more information about the concert, please contact Common Thread at 416-410-5022 or by email info@commonthreadchorus.ca.
And the last announcement is for something pretty exciting. Juno-nominated artist Kini Star appears in concert with Mai Kuda, Lena Ricolette, formerly of Red Slam, Dance Crew Matadance, and DJ Nick Red, at an all-ages show in a completely transformed one-night-only venue at 25 Cecil Street on April 1st. Rosina Cassie from Toronto electronic crew LAL and the amazing theater artist Sedina Fayati will be hosting this fabulous, politically charged, all-women and trans performers event, and where partial proceeds go to Turtle Island and African Reparations Funds, and no one is illegal. Tickets are available online at toronto.nooneisillegal.org/springup. All one word, and at the Toronto Women's Bookstore and Soundscapes. And I think that does it for the headlines and the news and announcements for today's show. I believe we're going to go to a musical break, and this is going to be a song by a Canadian artist, Sally Folk, who is based in Montreal. The name of the track is Superwoman, and it's all queued up and ready to go. Thanks for tuning in to this Friday's Word of Mouth News, brought to you by Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. Keep it locked.
Next, we will be talking to a member of the Coalition Against Israeli Apartheid about the Global Boycott Divestment Sanctions Day of Action on Saturday, March 26, 2011 at 12:30 p.m. Thank you, Sue, for joining us.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
A little busy.
Yes, yes. Tell us about Global Divestment Sanctions Campaign and your Day of Action.
Well, this is going to be the second action on Land Day for calling for a global boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel. And Land Day happened on March 30th, 1976. Israeli police and the army fired into a crowd of Palestinians who were protesting about land rights, and six people were killed. And ever since then, every March 30th, Palestinians commemorate Land Day because it's symptomatic of what Israel is doing to Palestinians and to Palestine, which is stealing the land. So tomorrow we're going to be having a small march to commemorate Land Day and also to honor the Palestinian call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And we're asking people to show up at King and Bay at 12:30. We're also going to take some time to commemorate the six people murdered in 1976 in Palestine, and also stolen sisters and other murdered comrades and people who've recently died, such as Dudley Laws.
Mm-hmm. I was just, if people want to know more, why global divestment sanctions? Why that approach?
Well, the BDS movement is a nonviolent movement that's rights-based and is basically asking Israel to come into compliance with international law. Israel is in contravention of the Fourth Geneva Conventions, of hundreds and hundreds of UN resolutions from the General Assembly as well as the Security Council, and Israel is in contravention of international law. They continue to build settlements, they continue to kill Palestinians, and claim everything under the aegis of security, when nothing could be further than the truth. And BDS basically is asking them to just adhere to international law, which they've signed on to, but they don't comply with.
Mm-hmm. So
they're also right now they're putting millions of dollars into fighting the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign because it's working. It's also a tool for education.
Mm-hmm. So if people wanted to get information on Canadian corporations that are, funding through their products, the fight in Israel, and how would they find that out? Like, can you give me some names of, like, companies? Like, I heard Mountain
Equipment, mm-hmm. Co-op, keeps in stock seamless underwear that's manufactured by Israel. There's also a recent divestment campaign that was launched by Students Against Israeli Apartheid against Hewlett-Packard, BAE Systems, and a couple of other companies that my tired head is not recalling right now. Oh, Northrop Grumman was one of the others. And these are companies specifically that supply Israel with the components for arms and security systems.
Mm-hmm.
And if people wanted more information, they could go to the Coalition Against Israeli Apartheid's website, kayaweb.net, I believe it is. And you can also get more information about the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement at bdsmovement.net.
Okay. Can you just remind us one more time when and where your action is?
We're going to meet at 12:30 tomorrow, the 26th of March, at King and Bay.
Thank you so much, Sue, for joining
Thanks.
Us.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye-bye. So next we will have a short music break. The title will be a song called Dat's Right, and the artist is Franco Proetti Morftet.
That's right. like that's tight, that's certified. Who boy that should take flight? Yeah, we got the people to move. No war, get the people to move. Snow on the scene like a magazine. I rock with beans. I mean, I'm like dope. I mean, I used to have a haircut like I was Mr. Clean. The 514. You better know my team, the one pet. They ride with John E. And it sounds so deaf, y'all ain't hearing me. I'm fair myself, y'all be fair with me. Around, I'm my best step. Can't believe it. Care for me. Keep your mind clear for me. This is Montreal playing. No time for chill. We cold as hell. 365 with you. Hey, yo, we got too sick.
Again, that song was from Franco Peretti, from Morftet, and the song was titled That's Right. On Tuesday, March 15th, was International Day Against Police Brutality. Protesters rallied in front of 51 Division to show their dissent against police brutality around the world in Toronto and in the downtown core. In this clip coming up, Gaetan, a respected and longtime OCAP activist, will be speaking. Let's listen in.
On March 15th, which is historically recognized as International Day Against Police Brutality. Not only here in 51 Division, but across Toronto, across Canada, and across the world, there are people gathering today to protest brutality that is that they experience against the police. I just want to start by pointing something out first. Before, I've worked in this neighborhood for 20 years. This station actually wasn't here before; it was over in Regent Park. Has a lot of history, 51 Division, with poor people. Some of it very, very nasty history. I won't go into a lot of it, but most of these cops will know about Cherry Beach, which is just down the road here. The name Thomas Kerr might ring a bell for D Platoon, which was suspended when they kicked the shit out of him. I mean, there's a lot of history here. Our community up to the north here experiences target policing on a daily basis. Tavis has been here, Project 35, Project 40, community action policing, all of that. But what is disturbing today in particular is this massive presence of police in front of 51 Division for such a small demonstration, given that if you go up there, there are social agencies right now who have to decide what to cut. Every one of those agencies have been told that they have to cut by 5%. So my question to Rob Ford is, where is this money coming from? How is it that they can spend all this money today to protect this building here, while people starve and don't have enough food to eat and don't have enough housing to the north here? How does that happen? So we're here to talk about poverty and policing. But in the end, what people have to understand is that there is chaos in poor communities. People are having a hard time. You can't leave 600 men living at Seton House by themselves without having trouble. It's impossible. You can't leave and abandon people in parks without expecting them to have trouble. But the answer has been consistently to give us cops, more and more cops, and refusing to address the issues, which are social issues. So shame on you.
Shame!
But worse, we're now entering another period where the federal government is talking about major, major austerity cuts. They're saying they're going to make cuts everywhere. And that means that poor communities again will feel it. And the answer, when the chaos happens, and when people protest like today saying, you know, all we're here to say today is we want food and we want housing. Not more of these cops. That's what we're saying. That's our message today. You know? Accountability, you know? Because you know what? You can't deal with this. You've been having a war on drugs for 20 years. You've been beating the shit out of people in there. Stop that shit. We want you to deal with that.
That was Gaetan talking about police brutality in the downtown core. And, of course, we just like to thank him for his very passionate speech. They don't call him the heart of OCAP for nothing. I mean, he has firsthand experience of dealing with the poor in our community and their interaction with the police. And truly, he speaks from the heart and from experience. Just to remind you, you are listening to CKLN 88.1 Word of Mouth OCAP Radio, coming at you from the Ryerson campus. New York City's Movement for Justice in Albario is an organization composed mainly of immigrant tenants in Albario that live in New York City They fight for human dignity and against community displacement. They fight for the liberation of every marginalized group, including immigrants, people of color, women, gays, lesbians, transgender communities, and all the poor of the world. Movement for Justice in the Barrio is part of the other campaign initiated by the Zapatista Army of National Liberation. This week in Toronto, there is and was a series of events around the New York City's Movement for Justice in El Barrio. As I speak, if you're interested, between 6 and 8 p.m. at St. Luke's United Church, 353 Sherbourne, there is an event entitled El Barrio is Not for Sale, It is to be Loved and Defended, with speakers from OCAP and No One is Illegal. It's informational and speeches and also a community dinner. Tomorrow, there is an event at 1790 Eglinton West at the Ascents Bookstore between 4 and 6 p.m. And the event is entitled El Barrio is Not for Sale and the Other Campaign with speakers from Barrio Nuevo. And last night, there was an event entitled Gentrification and Resistance. Next, we will be listening to a clip from Juan Haro, an activist from the Movement for Justice in El Barrio, talking about organizing amongst the Latino community in New York City. This was recorded at last night's event. Let's listen in.
So as you can see, our members are mainly immigrants, mainly from Mexico. The organization, when it was founded, it was actually founded by 15 families, all undocumented immigrants that happen to be from Mexico. We don't self-identify ourselves as a Mexican organization, but the immigrant population in East Harlem tends to be predominantly Mexican, and we organize in privately owned buildings, and the great majority of the tenants in privately owned buildings in El Barrio also happen to be Mexican, so our membership is reflective of that reality. And many of our members, you know, already when they crossed the border, came to the U.S., they already had a really deep analysis based on their own life experience as to what the root cause of the problems they were confronting daily consisted of. And they basically, as you heard them say for themselves in the video, they have a critique of the political class. They identify as the capitalist system, neoliberalism, as the root cause of the problems they're facing. As an organization, we don't work with politicians, whether it's Republicans, Democratic Party. We don't believe that that's the way to make change. Literally, like, our members began to door knock, speak to their neighbors. Most of our meetings for the past 6 years have taken place in the lobby of the buildings in the neighborhood. We currently have 55 committees established, building committees. That's what makes up the structure of the organization. We don't have, you know, president, as you notice, there's no hierarchies. We're opposed to that. There's no board of directors or anything like that either. We're completely against that. And, you know, who you saw here in the video are the people that are leading this fight, that are making decisions for themselves. And, you know, what we've accomplished so far, you know, is really humbling to us as a community, because it's something that we hadn't experienced in the past. Every single member of the organization lacked any sort of political organizing experience until the organization began. So this is all very new to them, and as you notice, you know, it's the members, if you were to ask the members, like, what is, like, the greatest achievement, for them, it goes beyond, like, fighting and beating a specific landlord or, you know, beating some sort of, like, local politician. For them, it's being able to, like, construct from below this culture of resistance where their children are growing up in this environment, right? And, you know, there's, like, these, like, generations, right? Like, the youth are taking leadership, and it's something that our members really value, because it'll go against everything that, you know, society, media, et cetera, tries to promote, right? And so this is something that they're constructing collectively by themselves, despite these other forces that tell us not to go in this direction. It'd be great to hear from you guys. Like, if you all have, like, questions, comments. I know that the video, like, describes a lot of our struggle. So, does anyone have any, do you want to say anything? You want anything to share?
Sure, yeah. Well, thank you, first of all, for showing the video. It's really exciting and inspiring to get to see actual, you know, footage from some of those moments. I would really love it, actually, if you wanted to talk about some of these battles that you guys have actually been successful in fighting. It's really great to hear that you've taken on these big landlords in East Harlem and actually won. And I would love to hear some of the detail of how that organizing actually worked, and especially given the analysis that the organization and members of the organization hold about the sort of structural dynamics. How then does that translate into actual tactics and strategies that you guys take up?
Okay. The organization was once again founded by 15 families, immigrant families, and they happen to all live in buildings owned by our initial target, a multimillionaire named Stephen Kessner, who owned 47 buildings in the neighborhood. So it was these families that came together and literally started door knocking and were able to find the list of the 47 buildings in the neighborhood and began to expand. So initially, the 15 families formed committees, building committees in their buildings, and then they expanded from there. And so as committees are being formed in these different 47 buildings, one of the ways in which decision-making took place was literally by having each building committee decide its own strategy. So in other words, you know, we had committees throughout the neighborhood in these 47 buildings targeting the same person, right, Steve Kessler, the landlord. And so the tenants felt it was important for each committee, right? These are like the founding members and beyond, each committee to decide its own strategy. So you would have a situation in which maybe one building, the tenants in that building would decide to organize a street protest against Kessner. And tenants in another building might decide to sue him, right? To take him to housing court. Committee in another building might decide to bring the press, have a press conference, and like show them the conditions that they're facing in their apartments. There's different ways in which landlords try to displace you from your home in East Harlem. One of the ways that they do that is by not making repairs. So you have like no heat, no hot water, you have bed bugs, you have literally ceilings collapsing on your children, and this is what many of the families are facing. So there was different ways they felt needed to, the different ways to combat this individual. And so they went ahead and they implemented a number of tactics against him to the point in which he was cornered. So there was definitely retaliation. It was a very public battle. The Village Voice, one of the newspapers in New York City, had named him one of the 10 worst landlords of New York City, which was like part of the campaign that we had waged against him. He retaliated. He knew, for example, that the members were immigrants, and many of them were undocumented. Therefore, he would threaten them with immigration, right, bringing in immigration to deport them. He would suddenly some of the members were getting letters in their mailbox, like anonymous letters threatening them. It was really intense, but the members kept fighting, regardless of their status, regardless of the fact that most of them don't speak English. They just kept fighting, and many of them, the great majority of them were women, right? Were single women, mothers, right, with children who were leading the struggle, and it was a long, hard-fought battle. It was approximately 2 years, and it reached a point where he just couldn't sustain, like, what he was trying to do, like, stop us from organizing, and so he literally just picked up and, like, left El Barrio, and for the members, you know, that was like the very first like concrete victory. And for them, you know, it was incredible. It was like life transforming because they never thought that, you know, they'd be able to, you know, as simple, humble, poor people take on this multimillionaire who owned so much of El Barrio, so much like property. And so concretely, that's the way that occurred. Now, in like the formation of the organization, you know, since day one, what we practice is autonomy. So for example, if you have a building committee, and if the building committee decides to sue the landlord, and let's say the members in another building think that's not the most effective way to approach it, well, there's mutual respect. So each committee could decide whatever it chooses, and the rest of the organization will back you up, will support you. The other thing that happened was as the organization, you know, began to grow even further beyond these 47 buildings, the targeting of our membership and of our organization by the local politicians, by the city council. I think here you call them counselors, like that, right? And so, you know, they began to like wage a very aggressive campaign against us in an attempt to squash us, right? But they weren't able to succeed, as you can see in the video. You know, we know that the mayor, the local city council, the councilors, you know, they're facilitating displacement in East Harlem. So we know it's not just about targeting landlords, it's not just about targeting these multinational corporations, but it's also about targeting the entire political system that's allowing this to take place.
From the Movement for Justice. Just to remind everyone, that was Juan Hario, an activist from the Movement for Justice in El Barrio, talking about organizing amongst the Latino community in New York City. And there is still one event left for the Movement for Justice in El Barrio. And if you're interested, you can attend tomorrow between 4 and 6 p.m. at 1790 Eglinton West at the Ascents Bookstore. And the event is called El Barrio is Not for Sale and the Other Campaign with speakers from Barrio Nuevo. And next we will have a song from Lal called Self-Defense. And it's coming.
And you can try to push me around, try to push me around, try to push me around. And you can try to take me down, down. And you can try to sell me out, try to sell me out, try to sell me out. But I will always hold my ground, always hold my ground, always hold my ground. Always defend myself, always defend myself.
And that was Lal, Self-Defense. On March 19th, the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty held a Poor People's Assembly at the Davenport Perth Community Centre. In various cities over the next few weeks, poor people and their allies will be holding local assemblies to plan a real fight back to challenge the Liberal government, restore the special diet, and win an increase in welfare and disability rates. Coming up next are various clips from that assembly. I believe the first one is from Lisa Schofield and her Raise the Rates demands.
But what are the demands of the campaign today? So number one, reverse the cuts and raise the rates. What does this mean? So number one, we demand an immediate increase in OW welfare and ODSP rates to bring them back to pre-Harris levels. 55% now raise the rates to where people can live with health and dignity. That's number one. Number two, we demand the minimum wage freeze be lifted immediately and that minimum wage be increased to a living wage for everyone in Ontario. Number three, we demand the full restoration of the special diet to a benefit of up to $250 for food and complete reversal of all intrusive measures that they brought in.
Sign on and endorse the campaign. It said that we would use resources to help to mobilize. So many of you will know Brother Ilian Burbano. He is actually a member release from us. He's released from his workplace in order to be able to talk to our local unions. At every one of our events, educationals, conferences, we're making presentations to our members, making sure they understand what's happening to people on social assistance, making sure that they understand the call and the demands of the Raise the Rates campaign. And we're actually engaging in some community forums. So our university workers were just in Sudbury and did a community forum with the Labour Council and with many other activists in that community to talk about these issues. It's part of that mobilizing that we're doing. We're also, and that education of our members is so important. Many people don't understand what's happening. We need to make sure that we talk to people about their sense of fairness. Whenever we address this issue with our members, with anyone, they understand immediately that what's happening to people on social assistance is unfair, it is unjust, and it is something we must work to change. And so we are also part of, as a union, we engage with the provincial government. We make briefs on budgets, and there's a budget coming. It was a key component of our government relations work, and in every meeting we have with every minister to talk to them about this issue, to say that it is unfair and it is unjust and it is beneath any government to ignore poverty in our province. The Liberals, as you know, said they would have an anti-poverty agenda. They have lied. We have to remember, too, who Tim Hudak is. He was a member of that cabinet of Mike Harris who in 1995 decided it was going to target poor people and people on social assistance. And he is very much ascendant in the polls. It's why we're also mobilizing around the provincial election, which is coming in the fall. It's why I'm so glad that Michael Prue is here from the New Democratic Party. It's why we need to focus on those issues as well while we mobilize, because who gets elected in October will be very key to all of our work. The work that we're doing is in solidarity. We're glad that many other unions, like the Ontario Nurses Association, Labour Councils, others are coming on board. We're going to be part of helping to make that, to expand that. These attacks on poor people, on people on social assistance and ODSP, are like the attacks on public sector workers, are like the attacks on the services that we rely on. We're in a beautiful community centre, part of which is operated by the City of Toronto. The mayor in this city, if he had his way, would sell this centre, would have it be provided by for profit. These things are connected. It's that work that we must do together in solidarity. And when we work together, it's been a long struggle. But it is one that I want to say to you on behalf of our members. We have 230,000 of them in this province. That we will stand with the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, with the STOP, with other groups that we have been working with on this issue until there is justice for people on social assistance. Thank you.
Almost a year later, they backed off on that, instead choosing to completely gut an already very restrictive special diet, which they've attempted to restrict access on numerous occasions before, but this is definitely the most significant attempt at that. And they were very clear as to why they were doing that, to cut people off, to take money away from people, and mainly from the so-called cheaters who were getting this. There's sort of three major changes that are happening with the special diet, and they take effect April 1st, which is also why we've organized a day of action on that. So the first thing is that everybody who's currently on the special diet will have to reapply to new regulations. So that in and of itself is going to mean that lots of people aren't able to access decent medical providers and just simply won't be able to hand forms in because they can't see somebody who will sign for them. The amount of money that you can access for diets is changing. Some diets are going up, many are going down. Specifically, the serious weight loss-based diet, things like cancer and HIV, the way that you can access that money is going down. The second thing that's happening is the schedule itself, if you will. So right now, you're able to access special diets based on a specific list of medical conditions, which again has already been reduced over the years quite significantly, is again being reduced. So many of the common ways that people were getting the special diet medical conditions that affect low-income communities in particular, things like anemia, low iron, cardiovascular disease, liver disorders, prediabetes, allergies like soy, have all just been completely taken off the special diet. Both the amounts and the current list of conditions that you'll be able to access as of April 1st were all taken from recommendations from a group of doctors and medical providers and academics who advised the government how to take money away from us, pretty much. So that's not the doctors and medical providers you're going to hear from today who are supporting us in this struggle. And the third way is the way that they're going to administer the special diet. It's going to change in ways that are really going to affect people, in that we now have to sign a medical release form every time we put in a special diet. So that gives your worker in your office access to information on your health history related to why you're getting that special diet. So, like I said, these take effect April 1st. If you're currently getting a special diet, you will get your current special diet until July 31st. So it's your August check that you're going to lose your money altogether, as many, many, many people will lose part of your money or continue to get access to some of that money. So we're suggesting to people that you think about not handing in new forms, if you can, any new forms until the last possible moment, so you're not going to lose money until that August check. So, in the month of July, you can get new forms and not before then, even though in the mail people are getting forms right now, to just hold on to those. And so it's the August check that we're expecting also, in terms of thinking ahead, that there's going to be massive, massive cutoffs, and people are going to see their incomes go down by, hundreds and hundreds of dollars in some cases. So that's pretty much it. If people have specific questions around their own situations related to the special diet or generally around welfare and disability, there's going to be some OCAP people sticking around at the end, be at the back, maybe by the OCAP banner up there, and just come speak to us. We'll be happy to answer questions. Thanks.
In poor communities, have some power. If you want to get the ear of government and you're the CEO of a major corporation, you've got a very obvious power. You can threaten to take your investment somewhere else. Workers, the great power that workers have is their ability to withhold their labor. Right? That's how workers have won things. So what can poor people do? Obviously, threatening not to cash their welfare checks is not going to be a very powerful weapon. So what can people do? Well, they can do one of two things. They can hope that if they put forward their suffering to governments and the general public, that people will understand and feel that something has to be done. And I don't think that theory has paid off. What has worked in history is when people organize collectively, they stand up and they disrupt the institutions that oppress them. That's basically the theory that OCAP organizes on. We're not some mindless group of people who just like going into offices of rich people and giving them problems, although it is lots of fun. But we do it for the simple reason that it's what has worked historically and it's what has worked for us. Somebody said to me the other day, he was an academic, but he said a very, very insightful, practical thing. He said, which academics frequently do. But he said to me that workers have discovered in unions that the great power that they have is to not be where their employer wants them to be. But the main power that poor people have is to be where they're not supposed to be. And that really has been historically how it has worked. In the Great Depression, Gaetano Ruin OCAP has been doing a great deal of research about the unemployed organizing that took place in this city in the 1930s. And when you read what they did and how they defended their communities under attack, you see the lessons that need to be applied today. Like, people in those days would organize with no telephones in the space of half an hour a crowd of 2,000 people to prevent one single family being evicted from their homes. They would go and invade the relief offices. They would organize marches daily. They would confront the system that was oppressing people, and they won things. And OCAP hasn't been able to organize on that scale as yet, although times are changing. But we've won that way. That's how we've won things. So we don't feel shy or nervous or inhibited about acknowledging what we stand for. We don't think it's going to work to make people feel sorry for us. We don't think it's going to work to go to governments and say, it's so awful, this poverty, please do something about it. What's going to work is when they realize that we're not going to stand it for it anymore. When we deliver in this province conditions of social unrest emanating from poor communities in alliance with a broader working class common front of resistance. When we build that, we can win something. When we build that, we can defend people. And that's what we're trying to do. The relationship that we're building, particularly with QP Ontario, heartens us enormously. We're going to different cities, we're going to different parts of the province, and we're delivering a message of opposing this government, of opposing those responsible for poverty and fighting back. So the next step is going to be a march on April the 1st. There's going to be a day of action, and things will be happening in other parts of the province as well. But on April the 1st, we're going to organize a march, and it's going to be timed to coincide with the attack on the special diet. And we want people to go back into this community and other communities and tell people to turn out and mobilize. We want to mobilize on a big scale that day. We're going to march out of City Hall, the new symbol of austerity, and we're going to march up past Queen's Park, and then on the way back down Bay Street, we're going to stop at one of the most exclusive restaurants in the city and have a protest there. And that's not going to be an obscure point for us. While there are people who are sending their children to bed hungry, who are having to go to food banks, there are people who get to spend more on their bloody lunch, one lunchtime, than a family gets to live on for a month. That is an obscenity, and we're going to confront it, because they can't tell us. They can't tell us there's no resources to provide for people's needs. There's resources. So please, help us build on April the 1st. Help us build beyond. Our message to poor people is, if you want to suffer, you can close the door and suffer in silence all by yourself. But if you want to challenge the conditions and the injustices that make you poor, you've got to unite with others in your situation. You've got to build a movement that sweeps this province. This gathering today is important. People have come from this neighborhood, and they've taken a stand, and I value that. But we've got to build a movement far in excess of what's gathered in this room. We've got to go back to our neighbours. We've got to go back to our communities. We've got to build a movement, and we've got to scare the shit out of this government. Thank you very much.
Hear, hear. That's what I got to say. Hear, hear. So in order, from first to last, I'm just going to recap what you've listened to. Our first clip was from Lisa Schofield, OCAP organizer, about Ontario Coalition Against Poverty's Raise the Rates demands. Our second clip was from Fred Han, president of QP Ontario, and he was talking about QP's organizing against the cuts and in support of OCAP's Raise the Rates campaign and special diet campaign. Then you heard from Rachel Hewitt, previous organizer and still a longtime member, talking about the changes to the special diet. And that, when I say member, I mean member of the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. And of course, you heard from John Clark, current organizer, longtime organizer, urging people to come out for our April first action. So let me just give you a little update on that action and some background. It has been 16 long years since Mike Harris cut welfare and froze disability rates, in case people don't remember. McGuinty liberals have been in power for half that time and have done nothing to deal with poverty. In fact, people are worse off today. It takes a 55% increase to bring benefits to pre-Harris levels. Now, what that means is this. When you take into account the rise in inflation, the rise in the cost of living, the rise in rent, and to have people live in the poverty they were living at in 1994, you would need a 55% increase in welfare rates. And that's pretty astronomical when you picture that. And now as the economy continues to slump and the need is greater than ever, this government, the Liberal government, is cutting the vital special diet allowance that has enabled people to survive. With no intention of dealing with the crisis of poverty, they have created the Liberals are setting up an 18-month-long review of the welfare system to divert us from taking action to challenge them. And that's what governments do, right? They they have reviews, they have, you know, community councils, they talk a lot and they analyze, and then after all work is said and done, you're lucky if you get a 2% increase in welfare, and that's maybe an extra $20, right? We don't need a review to tell us we're hungry. What we need is decent income and a 55% increase in the rates right now. And so on April 1st, we are going to gather at Nathan Phillips Square at 12 noon, and we are going to march on the McGuinty government. And we are asking everybody out there who supports this action to come out and join us and tell him we are not going to take it anymore. Okay? If you'd like to get more information, you can call OCAP at 416-925-6939, and or you can check out our website at www.ocap.ca. And this is CKLN 88.1 FM, Word of Mouth, OCAP Radio, and I'm Kelly Bentley for your host, and I'm going to say goodnight. But before I do that, I'd like to thank Shita Laudia and Susie Alvarez for doing the headlines. I would like to also thank Mark Bro for teching and producing our show. And our next program will be on, I believe, April 29th between 6 and 7 p.m. And up next is Maria Alana Escobar with Vantana El Barrio. Good night.